Director's Notes Festival Special, the Times BFI 53rd London Film Festival.
Welcome to Director's Notes, the podcast dedicated to the what, how, and why of independent filmmaking. Here's your host, Mar Bell.
We're back here at the Filmmakers Afternoon Teas, which sounds rather posh, at the London Film Festival. And I'm pleased to be joined by co-directors Damani Baker and Alex Flack to talk about their film with the legend that is Bill Withers, Still Bill. Welcome to Director's Notes, Damani and
Thank
Alex.
Thank you for having us.
The way that we always kick off the interviews here on the show is to find out a little bit more about the directors and what your journeys, both of you in this case, were to becoming film directors and how that happened.
Sure, well, I don't know how to do much else. I started, in college and grad school. I went the kind of very traditional route of a director. I went to graduate film school and started making projects, but I don't think I could actually call myself a director until I found a few stories that I really loved and thought were worth pursuing. Before Still Bill, I'd done a few other short films and one other longer project, but this was our first collaboration as a feature. I just love telling stories, and I feel like so much of my job has been kind of just listening and looking at things around me that have always been there that I thought maybe if they'd give me the opportunity, I'd ask the right questions and a story would begin.
Mm. And of course, you've had to live down the, well, I'm sure it's an honor, but then it's just endless pressure that 25 filmmakers to watch from Filmmaker Magazine.
That thing has been following me. Right, and it's so funny because it's like it was a someone to watch, but I never knew at what point I was being watched. So I appreciate it, and it was a great honor. And since then, that was 2000, I've been working since. And those two projects that I think I was recognized for were really my first two jobs. So yeah, no, it's been an interesting ride. But honestly, I think the more I've allowed myself to dive into just the core of three-dimensional human communication, I've kind of understood kind of what role I may play as a director, because I don't know what even that means necessarily. I think I'm just curious, and if it's there, I'll check it out. Mm-hmm.
And Alex, how did you end up?
I have the pleasure of never being listed under the 25 to watch, so I have no pressure at all. I'm incredibly honored to not be included in that list. I started in television, actually, doing a lot more writing and producing, and I think I'm sort of the same as Damani. I didn't study in school, incidentally. I studied English and religion, but like Damani, I think for me it's all about stories and all about interesting characters and people, and even great narratives, are ultimately really about a human being. And for me, I think I actually in my core, I'm sort of primarily a writer, and I think that actually my biggest strength, at least when it comes to anything having to do with media, is production. I'm interested in human stories, and I don't think it's my calling to be a director. I think it's my calling to find whatever medium is right for whatever that story is. Sometimes it's an article, and sometimes it's a short piece of content. Sometimes it's a screenplay, and sometimes it might be, hopefully one day it'll be a novel or a script, or a film. And I think in this case, I always think it's really interesting to try to find out what is the medium that really matches the thing you're trying to do, because we could have gone on this journey with Bill Withers and decided, what we really should do here is write a screenplay and make a feature film, or what we really should do is just write this as a book or an epic poem or whatever would be the best served thing. But with Bill, we made this choice, and it wasn't a hard choice to make. It wasn't like we juggled all of those things, but he himself is just such an extraordinary human being to be around and to experience what it's like to be with him, that we knew we didn't want it to be a biopic, because that was too much of a sort of cold look at a human being's career or history of their music. And we knew that it shouldn't be a narrative, because then it would be someone else. That it needed to be this sort of really personal documentary. So that's why we directed it together. And this is my first time really directing a feature. Usually I'm on the writing production side. But it just always comes down to the stories.
Yeah.
I think both of us.
I'm sure that I could just say, all right, Still Bill, Bill Withers, and that's enough to make everybody interested in the film. You know, right, literally. Right, right. But how would you say that the film is framed? Obviously, it's a documentary, but what would you say that the through line is for the film for anyone who hasn't had the opportunity to see it?
The fact is, actually, if you said, you know, Still Bill Withers, actually, most people wouldn't respond like, okay, I'll go see it. Maybe in England they would a little bit more, but people don't know his name that much. They certainly know Lean on Me and Lovely Day, and they know Sunshine and Just the Two of Us, and then they sort of say, oh, that's Bill Withers? Okay. But he's almost so deliberately pulled himself out of the limelight that it's not one of those things where that many people are walking around going, yeah, no, I wonder whatever happened to Bill Withers, because they don't even know his name, you know? I think the through line, which is what for me makes it interesting to literally everyone, even the ones who Bill Withers is not a household name for, is that it's not a story about a musical icon, like whatever happened to. That's not what it's about. And if you've never heard Bill Withers' music, or if you never particularly wondered or cared whatever happened to him, it's still totally a film that is about what it means to be a father, and what it means to be a husband, and what it means to be a man who's secure with himself, who's overcome hardships. He was a stutterer until he was 28 years old, and he served in the Navy for 9 years. And it's really about being comfortable with yourself and self-esteem and what family means, and sort of really just the heart and soul of a man. If you're interested in that, you'll be interested in this movie. Right. If you're interested in Bill Withers and the accomplishments that he's had musically, mm-hmm. extra bonus for you.
Also, I think the music in the film, we use his music as something that kind of pushes the narrative and also comes from his life, his experiences. But we get through like the fame section of his life pretty early on, you know, within the first 20 minutes.
Like 8 minutes.
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah.
And so you get the hits. But if you're willing, you kind of sit for this other kind of ride that we just thought was much more interesting. Because, you know, on the now with the music industry, you know, you can put the 10-minute kind of EPK video with the DVD that just is like about a fan base and appealing to people who really just love the music, which is great. But some of the responses we've been getting from the film are about everything but the music. I mean, most of the Q&As, I think there's been maybe two questions in 7 months about a song or two. Mm-hmm. Everything else has been about, as Alex said, you know, mortality and overcoming obstacles and other things that really...
Father-daughter relationship and all these things.
Yeah. You know,
people care about because they relate to it.
Yeah, and they're weeping in the film not because of Ain't No Sunshine. They're weeping because someone has allowed you in a way that they never saw.
Talking of which, yeah, I will admit that the bit when his daughter plays the song to him and he's choked up and I'm going, oh, that's really... Oh, no, it's happened to me.
Right. And so I think the audience, the lights come up and I think people are like, holy shit. I just spent an hour and 18 minutes with Bill Withers, the human being, not Bill Withers, the person who I've known and loved because we sang these songs in school or in church or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that is the biggest reward, I think, for us, is that we've made something that will serve as a document for hopefully, you know, 40 years from now. If you ever really want to know who Bill Withers is, great. But anyone who'd like to have a conversation about things that really are meaningful to us as people... You may check this out.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I found interesting as well, because, you know, I knew Bill Withers, you know, mm-hmm. Bill Withers songs, and I was going, yeah, that's brilliant song, but hadn't realized how much he'd stepped back from the limelight. You know, we get, as you said, Bill Withers, the man and the father, but it almost feels like this would be a perfect template to show any new band or new artist going into the music business of, look, just look at the way that this guy has done it, and when he's talking about not wanting to compromise when they say, all right, can you cover this Elvis song? And I think one of the things that I admired most about him is that a lot of artists that you end up respecting if you're a fan of music, there's always this element that they're in love with the fandom and the fame of being that artist, whoever it is, you know, that they've become. Whereas from Bill, it seems that to him it was about, I had these songs that I wanted to sing. I haven't currently got any songs. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll come back when I'm ready.
Right.
You know, Ain't No Sunshine, for him, he describes it as basically a lottery ticket. You know, he had his job. He was doing his thing. He decided to make this demo.
He kept his job while he was recording the song.
He kept his job while he was recording the actual album, not even the demo.
Right.
He was like had a day job and would go at 5 p.m. and go in and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young would be down the hall recording one thing and this guy would be over here and he'd be like, what am I doing around all these people? But if the album hadn't taken off or gotten picked up or anything like that, he would have been fine with it. He would have been like, all right, well, that lottery ticket didn't win the lottery, so I'll just keep working. It was just this let's just try this. Mm-hmm. He also was old enough, you know, at that point to not have had the psychological disadvantage of needing to completely define himself by being a performer. You get into this thing when you're a teenager, or, you know, in your 20s or early 20s or something like that, and if you haven't had anything else for 10, 15 years other than the life of performing, and then that's what feeds you, being in the limelight. If that goes away, as it almost inevitably does, with the exception of a few people, you can really be in trouble. You have no sense of self-worth. We've seen it happen to millions of people, where they just kind of, you know, they're 35, 40 years old, and they haven't had a hit in 10 years, and they don't know what to do with themselves. Start using drugs, or what, they're unhappy, or whatever the situation is. Mm-hmm. Bill was already sort of a complete, secure man. So, you know, he didn't need to be defined by the music industry, and didn't allow himself to be.
Actually, there's a great line in the film where he's with Raul Midon and they're composing their song together, and he says to Raul, you know, if you start small, you have somewhere to go. And I actually just in this moment thought, like, oh, you know, I think he's actually living that way. Like, he keeps it all very tight, no frills. It's like, if that's your base, then you can only go here. But, you know, now with music, everyone starts here until they eventually get knocked down to the nugget of what they're actually really brought them to music in the first place. So yeah. Bill's whole philosophy, just like, you know, just start small, start quiet, and then build. Don't, you know, take it as high as possible until you get eventually knocked down, and it's a quick, fast, most of the time tragic ride. You know?
Yeah. How did you manage to get the project underway? Because again, yeah, as someone who doesn't court the fame side of things, and, you know, and has been this private guy for many, many years, you know, how did you get the in with Bill to start the project? Because if I'm right, you had several false starts, as in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a lot of false
starts. He told us no a lot.
First of all, you know, we're both 35, and when I got a little inkling in my head that I'm just going to try to see what the story is with this guy in about 1998. That was 11 years ago, so I was 24 years old. In my infinite wisdom, I called Sony, and I asked for the name of the guy who I saw had produced his last Greatest Hits record. I thought, maybe that's somebody who might have had some sort of contact with the Withers, you know what I mean? That was the first little thing that happened. And it was only a year or two after that, or something like that, that Damani and I went on a run together, I think, and we said, you know, let's just decide now that we're not going to give up on this. We're going to try to see what's happening here. And we started trying to find out what the deal was, and we got, you know, sort of doors sort of creaked open and then would shut back again. And you sort of look back at it and you think, you're only 25, 26 years old, you know. If you're somebody who's spent basically the last 30 years keeping yourself at a distance from, you know, media, and then a couple of punks come along and say, we want to, like, completely make a film about your life, and, you know,
25.
Of course they're going to. Yeah, of course. You know, I don't blame him for shutting us away. And then we got a lunch, finally, after a number of years, we got a lunch with his wife, who's his manager. We said, you know, we're going to be in L.A. tomorrow. Do you want to actually have lunch and stuff? And she said, sure. And so we quickly bought tickets to L.A. and flew out to L.A. and had lunch with her.
Magically appeared.
She liked us, and we had a really nice time with her, but it was another 18 months, 2 years before anything started happening. And we figured, you know what, we're never going to get Bill. We're not going to get him. Let's produce a tribute concert, and we'll have all the musicians who are in the concert tell the story of how he influenced them, and maybe we'll get one interview with Bill that we can sort of spice in there. That started getting going, and the people we were producing the concert with said, can you just try to get Bill's blessing? All we want is Bill's blessing to do the show.
This is a concert. This is 8,000 people, 8,000 to 10,000 people turnout that they usually put together.
Right. So we were able to land an actual meeting with Bill only on the pretext of, we just want to come out and ask you to say yes, that this concert can happen. Not even come to it.
Yeah.
That's how we got our first meeting with him. And he spoke for about 4 hours. Incredible guy. He said, sure, go ahead, have the concert. And Damani and I left.
We went and did three shots of tequila.
Yeah, I mean, that guy is so unbelievable. And then we said, can we just do this, you know, it's just a quick interview with you. And he said, sure. So we came to his house. We didn't know whether it was going to be a 15-minute interview, whether he'd be there, whether he'd shut the door in his face. We still didn't know what would happen. And he gave us a five-hour interview. No breaks, no water,
no bathroom breaks.
I mean, we've never done an interview like that. And then he gave us another one the next day. And then 350 hours, and three years later, we're, you know, really involved with his life.
350 hours of, you know, the paring down of that material, right. You know, kind of how hard was that, and how much did you discover the structure of the documentary during the edit, as opposed to what you had thought it was going to be, you know, even as you were continuing to film this material?
Well, you know, it's a good question, because we actually, it was very difficult. I mean, we had two great editors that brought something different to the table, and the first, you know, Sakai, she helped us think about how to structure a coherent narrative. Like, how do we tell a story with the footage you have? You have the music, you have the man, you have the family, you have other people and their opinion of the man. Where do those things all go? And literally in the office we edited, you know, there's a wall with all these note cards of every scene we had, you know, Cornel West moments, all these great little bites from other people. We had Bill's 20 hours of nonstop conversation on camera. We had interviews with his family. So we spent 4 months putting together a very structurally sound film. And then we spend another 4 months tearing it apart and making it a musical piece in its rhythm and its vibe and its texture and color. And we really start to think about going back into Bill the person and allowing his voice to connect every dot that we had just captured.
I think the edit for me, the sort of answer to that about, like, what did the edit teach you almost, was that mentally, I could have gotten to the first place we were. The sort of linear story. In fact, Damani and I essentially just wrote the outline structure for it one night. And if you look at it, it's essentially just a chronological way of telling the story. It wasn't that groundbreaking. We felt like it was, but actually the truth is that it was pretty much just telling his story chronologically with what we had. And we got there, and I could have done that. But I never could have done the second part without the editing sort of teaching us that thing of that vibe and that feeling of what it's like to be a human being. It's totally nonlinear, and it's told all over the place.
It's a filmmaker's dream. I mean, I feel like our challenge, even to answer from your first question for both of us, it's like, how do you communicate that? How do you communicate the stuff that you haven't quite seen yet? It may not even exist in the footage. It's like this other piece of who we are as people, the subject, the relationship and partners that we've brought into the project. Like, how do we nurture that zone and create the images that represent it and tell the truth that way? I mean, that, you know, I know that sounds maybe super hippie and like I'm like flying on ponies or something, but it really is like that space, that little nugget that you don't even know exists until you get to the point where you're like, oh God, look how those songs cut together with a shot of Marsha driving, with Corey, his daughter's voice, saying, I want to be like my father. All of a sudden, that one little piece, that one 30-second moment that you never planned pops.
Yeah. Where can people go to find out more about the film and also, you know, keep abreast on, you know, your future projects that you guys are doing?
StillBillTheMovie.com.
Brilliant. Thank you both so much for spending time with us today on the show. And good luck with the film. It's a fantastic piece. And
thank you.
Look forward to seeing more from you guys.
We're very happy to be here. Appreciate it.
To get show notes for this episode or post a comment, visit us at directorsnotes.com. You can also send comments, suggestions, or words of encouragement to directorsnotes@googlemail.com or via Skype at directorsnotes, all one word. Directors Notes is released on a Creative Commons Attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0 license. All other materials remain the property of our guests. Support the show by telling a friend, blogging about us, or leaving a review in iTunes. Every year, there are hundreds of great films of all types from around the world that don't get the exposure they deserve. It's our job to make obscurity a thing of the past, one film at a time.